This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural magic in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome back to The Drift Space, where we're more popular than Facebook on Google Play right now. I'm your host for the evening, Rebecca.
Wait.
Hold on.
Are you kidding? Your stats?
Also sponsored by Audible, Amazon,
Uber.
Grubhub.
Next week we'll be having Elon Musk on.
Anyway, I'm G.
I'm Dave.
JR.
Really following through with that sandwich. What are you eating again?
Sloppy Joe.
Will you be eating it throughout the entire podcast?
I can. I can really drag sandwich. This out. Oh, hold on, let me. All right, there's my drink.
And what are you drinking, JR?
I am pairing my Sloppy Joe with a nice ice-cold Coke Zero.
Oh.
And a water chaser, for those who...
And vodka. I need vodka to get through these episodes.
For this one, maybe. Let's continue.
If anything, I thought that would have been Transformers for you, Dave.
What do you think he was drinking during Transformers?
Vinegar?
Bleach. I wanted to drink bleach.
The vinegar went in his eyes.
I don't think that was any better once you watched it with vinegar. But okay.
We should watch more things with vinegar in our eyes.
Probably make a lot of things better.
Before we dive into our subject, I just want to point out that this is actually the first movie of this franchise I ever experienced. I may
Dave, was that you?
Yeah. I tried to stifle that, but I couldn't.
It's well, okay. Can I like interject in here real quick, Rebecca?
Okay, fine.
One of the things I wanted to do was we've typically been, you know, handing off the topic of the episode to those who are the most in the know about whatever we're covering. You know, Spider-Man, you give that to JR. Star Wars, you give that to Dave. Godzilla, you give that to me. And I thought it would be interesting to flip that on end and see, you know, have a novice kind of like introduce us to this world and whatnot. And forget having never seen the movies, Rebecca. You've never played the games.
Rebecca, as far as openings, that was a flawless victory.
In case you haven't figured out what we're talking about Mortal Kombat.
I would hope the title of the episode would give that away.
No, that's... they just assume that's what's going on in every episode.
No, people can't read. They don't know what we're talking about.
Let's just call every episode Mortal Kombat from now on.
1, 2, 3.
Mortal Kombat!
We'll change our intro.
Yeah, you're right. G was actually the one who suggests that I take this one because, as I so eloquently stated beforehand, and I agreed to do so. I like to come out of my comfort zone every now and then and broaden my horizons for a while. And I must say, for as little knowledge I know of Mortal Kombat, I'm ecstatic that certain characters said their famous lines in the movie like flawless victory or fatality, and my favorite, get over here!
That was a good impression. I appreciate that, Rebecca. You know what? A for effort. That had to be your first get over here. Good work. You never forget your first time.
Oh. Okay, so, and I was doing my research, and I know how I now hold a good amount of respect for Mortal Kombat. If I had any, I have more. And anyway, and its roots from gaming and character designs. I mean, let's face it, before there were feature films, pretty much all of our favorite genres and characters started off small. Batman's root was from Detective Comics. Transformers were from toys. Were just toys. Star Wars was just a script. Spider-Man was just a drawing. And Godzilla was a mirror from the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Okay, that part's not very small, but a bad example. But the point is, from what I gathered, Mortal Kombat was born as an arcade game that truly turned the heads of enthusiastic boys and worried parents in the early 90s. And although it wasn't the first violent game to come out during the time, it certainly got the most attention due to its graphics, over-the-top violence, and the realistic-looking characters, one being Johnny Cage, looking exactly like Jean-Claude Van Damme. Not only that, but the creators of the game put story backgrounds for each character that fans absolutely adored. Scorpion fights Sub-Zero because he murdered his family. Liu Kang is a renegade Shaolin monk. Kung Lao is part of his ancestral society known as the White Lotus Society, with a deadly sharp frisbee for a hat. Sonya Blade, a female U.S. Special Forces agent who has a rivalry with Kano from the Black Dragon Syndicate. And then Johnny Cage, the cocky movie star martial artist who eventually ends up with Sonya. There are many more, and I know that I'm missing, but I would probably take up the rest of the episode if I said any more. I mean, it got so popular throughout time, despite controversies, there was a timeline of the Mortal Kombat games that there have been 26 games altogether from 1992 to 2020. Now, on to the 2021 movie. As I said before, this is actually the very first Mortal Kombat film I watched from start to finish. And to prove how far behind I'm on it, I was not aware that the main character, Cole Young, was not part of the original Mortal Kombat series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And I may have had some idea from listening to the theme song and hearing the names Kano, Liu Kang, Raiden, Johnny Cage, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Sonya, Mortal Kombat. No, didn't hear Cole's name.
It's the song that gave it away. Okay. Yeah. But seriously, Rebecca, when did you realize that Cole was a movie-only character?
I had to look it up, actually, to figure that out. I mean, that's fine.
Did you realize after you had finished it, when you started doing your research, or, during the film?
I realized it after the movie, and I started my research. That I didn't know that Cole Young was not an original Mortal Kombatant.
Yeah. Okay.
But I did like his what are they called? Okara. Their
special move.
Yeah, their special move. But in the movie, they call it something else.
Fatality.
I'll just call it their special moves. Anyway, his special move was full body armor, and I thought that was pretty cool. While Kano's was eye laser, and Jax was better looking metallic arms and much more durable. I mean, they had a name, and I completely forgot about that right now. I totally forgot. Anyway, back to the movie.
By the way, Rebecca, you were correct. They called it the Arcana.
Arcana, that's what it's called. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah, like it's their key or their chi or their...
Yeah, yeah, that they have to access. Right. It's essentially unlocking their video game moves. Right.
Right. I like that. It was really cool. And, okay, you know, back to my... Okay, so when I heard of this movie at first, I thought, oh, it's just another crappy adaptation of a game. Turns out I was only half right. It is an adaptation.
Were you? Were you?
I mean, it is an adaptation of the game, but it's also an origin story of how the world of Mortal Kombat begins. It gave a brief background story of the two realms, Outworld and Earthrealm, and my two favorite storylines of this movie were Scorpions and Sonya Blades. I liked learning about Scorpions or Hanzo Hazishi's background, his family, and his rivalry with Sub-Zero or Bi-Han at that time. I mean, we even got a brief reason why Sub-Zero killed Scorpion's family out of revenge for him killing his clan. And I found it even more fascinating that Sub-Zero spoke his native tongue, Chinese, and his enemy's language, Japanese. It showed how dedicated and determined he was to know and study about Scorpion and his family before he kills them all.
I really appreciated that detail.
Yeah.
That sometimes Bi-Han would speak in Chinese, and there was a point where Hanzo, he says, "I don't understand your words, but rest assured, I'm going to kill you." I thought that was very interesting, because he would switch between Chinese and Japanese.
Yeah, that was pretty sick.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And my next favorite storyline is, you know what, I'm going to let somebody else take over, because I don't want to... I don't want to end the episode before it begins. I'm pretty sure I have so far, so somebody else go next.
Well, no, I mean, I it's kind of fascinating listening to you kind of immerse yourself suddenly in this world, because I know it's not something you've really known or been a part of. And I'll be honest, Rebecca, this is not a franchise I've really delved deep into, because it, you know, we didn't own a video game system till the PS2. We just had that no interest.
I mean, we had the Windows computer system, but I don't think...
Yeah, that didn't, you know. But being, you know, being a guy growing up in, you know, 80s, 90s, you can't be a boy at that age and not know, you know, who Scorpion is or Sub-Zero is from Mortal Kombat. It's kind of just in passing. You understand, you know, these violent characters and what they're from and the kind of iconic things they've said and done. I'll be honest, I enjoyed the movie. I don't know how good it is, but I did enjoy the movie. There were moments, though, where it felt like it was a really cinematic film, and then there were moments it just felt like a sci-fi original motion picture, and I can pinpoint the moments where it switches over from one to another. Almost any time there is an Asian actor on screen, it feels like a movie. I mean it. It's ridiculous. Whenever you have you had, you know, Ludi Lin as Liu Kang, he was the Black Ranger from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You had Joe Taslim as Sub-Zero. He was from The Raid. And yes. Freaking yeah. And then Hiroyuki Sanada, who has been one of the biggest international Japanese stars ever. You know, he was in Lost. Yes, he was in The Last Ship. He was in The Last Samurai. He was in The Wolverine, and he started his career in Japan on television. He's been in Super Sentai before.
He was even in Avengers Endgame at the beginning.
He was in briefly in Avengers Endgame. Yes,
he got a cameo.
So. And he got started receiving attention for his. He has a very prominent onstage career, and he became more noted for his role as the Fool in Shakespeare's King Lear. So yeah, no, he's had a fantastic career, a very fulfilled career. And I want to point out that as of this recording, the man is 60 years old.
No way.
I love this guy. I love this actor. And when I found out that he was Scorpion, I thought it was just the most genius casting possible. And the movie, you know, it really felt like a movie, like as soon as it opened up. We have this incredible rivalry that we're introduced to, incredible action sequences. You know, I loved the whole kind of 1600s samurai sort of setting and whatnot. It was really a fantastic opening. Yeah, in Japan. And then it switches over to the cage fight immediately after the fact. And I felt the shift, you know, and I didn't think Louis Tan, who plays Cole Young, particularly demands charisma when he's on screen. I can say the same thing about, is it Mikad or Mishad Brooks who plays Jax? Anyone? I don't know. And so on and so forth. Essentially, whenever the Asian actors are on screen and they're wearing their like incredible like onstage looking garb and whatnot, they're taking it so seriously. They're just made for it. They're built for it. They look the part. They're ready to spill out all these absurd lines and moves with such Shakespearean gusto. And I believe it. I believe every single over the top line they just emit. Whereas whenever there's a Caucasian actor on screen or any other, I'm sitting here thinking, we got you out of nowhere, you know, we dug you out of nowhere, and you look really hollow compared to, you know, Sonata, Paslam, Shin Han, Ludi Lin. It was really uncanny, with the exception of Josh Lawson.
As Kano.
As Kano.
Oh my gosh.
That man is my spirit animal.
JR, I saw a
brilliant accent and everything.
I saw a meme. It said Josh Lawson had to be rushed to the hospital due to back injuries for carrying the entire movie.
He about stole the movie.
He did steal the movie. Listen, I want to say Scorpion was my favorite character. And deep down, I'm kind of forcing it to be my favorite character because I love Hiroyuki Sanada. I loved the backstory going on there. And I thought, you know, the whole movie is basically building up to the point where he returns. We are eagerly anticipating his return, and he delivered as soon as he showed up. But Kano was there the whole time.
Like I said, he is my spirit animal.
I probably related to him the most, yes.
For someone who has very little knowledge of Mortal Kombat, I was not aware that Kano was a bad guy, and I personally was disappointed that Kano turned baddie in this film. And I really liked him at first. He reminded me of an Australian Jane Cobb, except less attractive. Although,
no, give me the scar across his face. That's a beautiful man.
Although it is good to know that he and the rest of the bad guys have literally been respawned at the end of the film.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
My next favorite storyline is Sonya Blades, because I feel like I somehow personally identify with her the most, because she's the only one in the group that doesn't have the dragon mark and is basically deemed useless. She's an outcast in the eyes of Raiden and everyone else, except for Cole and Jax. However, none of that stopped her from fighting anyway. In fact, she used whatever weapon she knew how to use to fight back, especially a gnome statue. A gnome statue.
In the next Mortal Kombat game, I want one of her moves to be the gnome statue to the eyeball.
Yes, please.
Classic.
Absolutely. She was the one to get Jax off of his mopey ass and keep pushing forward to recovery after losing his arms, eventually leading him to unlocking his arcana. Hey, I got it right. There it was in my notes. I feel like Sonya is an inspiration to those who feel like fighting is useless but still fight anyway because of a certain drive. Whether that would be family, hope, faith, whatever. I feel like Sonya gives hope to people that working hard to get what you want will eventually come. That you keep going and persevering despite what others will say to you. So I really liked Sonya Blade, and whether the actress was good, I thought she was all right. I personally liked Sonya Blade.
She didn't sell it for me.
I mean,
I'll be honest. I found again, it's Mortal Kombat. I know the point is to get to the fighting, but her exposition dump to Cole early in the movie. It was just a lot. It was a lot all at once, and I didn't think she particularly had the charisma to deliver it.
I personally disagree. So,
we should fight about it.
Okay, cue the music. Dave, what are your thoughts?
Cole was the most boring character. I could not stand Cole Young. I'm sorry. I get introducing a new character, and basically, to me, Cole's only purpose in the film was to get us from point A to point B. Point A being the beginning of the movie, to point B where we get Scorpion back. That was pretty much it. I saw, you know, Goldar Jr. I saw no point to him. I can definitely agree that, you know, on the whitey side, I can say that because I'm white. Josh Lawson as Kano stole the show, but you know, it was stacked on the other side of the court though, especially for me. Gee, you mentioned the raid earlier, and I have to come back to it. Joe Taslim, like, that man is a pro in every regard. Like, everything that he did, every move that he made, just was presented with such authenticity, which is weird for a character that makes icicles from his hands.
Well, you know? Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the authenticity. Yeah,
authenticity.
And you mentioned the authenticity. You mentioned the authenticity, and I have to go back to the first meeting between him and Hanzo, and the way he carries himself. You know, he's nothing like he was in the raid in this movie, but he really is bringing everything about his background to this movie. You know, I love the way when he was walking around, he had his hands behind his back, and you know, those hands are lethal weapons, very literally.
Yes.
And just how his composure and whatnot, the way he carries himself. And even later on in the movie, when he, you know, half his face is hidden, he's got his COVID mask on. He's just, he has such a presence to him, the way he talks, the way he moves, and absolutely one of the best parts of the movie. I have to agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. It was just, again, when the movie was focusing on these characters, it was a movie. When it was focusing on Cole and, you know, Jax and Sonya, it felt like a TV movie.
It felt like an episode of Riverdale.
Something like that, yeah. I'll go with that, yeah. Now, I don't think, you mentioned the point of Cole. I think the reason...
I want to interject.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry. it occurred to me, the more I think about it, the more I realize that Cole is probably a representation of the new player of the game. And he's every girl and guy's dream from the 90s of being thrown into the world of Mortal Kombat. And the fact that he's a descendant of the Scorpion is the cherry on top for a delicious gore fest cake. That's just me.
Well, I know, I get the point that he's the sort of everyman character for us to look through into this kind of video game world. And Dave, I do think, you know, he had an arc. He wanted to find his place in the world. He wanted to find his arcana. He wanted to find his purpose. And he found all of that. Was it particularly well done? Probably no more so than it was in Dragon Ball Evolution. but I think the point was served, and I think the purpose is there. Could you have made a Mortal Kombat movie without him? Absolutely. Yes. I think that version of this movie does exist or could have existed.
You want to know why? Because on some level, this wasn't Mortal Kombat, because Mortal Kombat never happened.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Mortal Kombat, like this was all like, which is an interesting take on the franchise. Like, what do they do in the off season? You know,
try to secretly kill each other behind it. Yeah. Behind the gods' backs. Yeah.
which is interesting. And I think to kind of sum it all up, like I view this, like I would, I enjoyed Mortal Kombat. Would I watch it again if it was on Spike TV like I would any other Jean-Claude Van Damme movie? Yes, absolutely. I think I'd rather watch the Van Damme flick, though, for sure. You get the splits in a Van Damme flick. Yeah.
Speaking of the Van Damme flick, I couldn't help myself, but after I watched the 2021 movie, I briefly looked at the other Mortal Kombat films and on YouTube, and the first clip was of Johnny Cage versus Scorpion, and I love how different both Scorpions were from each other from the 90s to now. I love how the 90s Scorpion sounded less like a killer, more like an angry parent. Get over here! Come here! Get down here! And then there's welcome!
Go to your room.
Exactly.
You are grounded.
Not to mention that Scorpion's weapon literally comes out of his palm like something out of the anime Parasite.
Yeah, I wasn't for that. That did not sit well with me at all. I was glad they changed that in the new movie.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad it was an actual weapon. Scorpion had his blade from back in feudal Japan, but not a snake like thing coming out of the palm of your hand.
That was gross. I didn't like it. No, and in the video game, I had to look this up. In the video game, it is the what's the weapon called?
It has a kunai,
right?
Kunai, yeah.
Kunai, yeah.
They have those in Monster Hunter. Anyway, go on.
he does use a kunai in the video games. That's the whole serpent coming out of the palm of the hand. That's strictly the 90s movie, as I understand it.
I think there was something so charming about the design of Sub-Zero and Scorpion, though, in the original. I really dug like the vibrant colors, and I don't know, like I'm not quite sold on the dimmed version that we kind of get of Sub-Zero and Scorpion in this 2021 release.
The Snydered version?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed there wasn't a little more blue coming out of the Sub-Zero costume, but there was more, I want to say like a lighter touch, a yellow or whatnot, coming out of Scorpion's.
Speaking of Scorpion, how was he able to speak English when he said, get over here, to Sub-Zero?
Well, he had 300 years to learn
English and hell.
Words in English, and that's what he spent doing.
Who passed by him in hell? Hitler? No, he spoke German. Richard Nixon? JFK?
Well, okay, and the thing is here, what I find so interesting is that the idea of a man you kill waiting in hell to come back as a specter and kill you is actually based in Chinese mythology and religion. Okay. And the concept of hell in China and most Asian cultures is not the same as it is in Judeo-Christian cultures. We tend to have a very narrow view of what hell is. Hell, too, in some other cultures, is just, you know, a place. It's not necessarily always a bad place. It's kind of like, you know, the underworld in Greek mythology. It's not necessarily a hell, but it is not really a place you want to be. And in this particular case, it was basically a waiting room for Scorpion's revenge.
Okay.
And so he was burning in hell with his own rage, waiting for the time that he would be brought back and exact his revenge on Sub-Zero, which I really liked that kind of attention to detail.
Talk about third degree burns.
Ha.
Dave thought it was fun.
JR, what did you think of the characters, especially in comparison of the 1995 film? Because I haven't watched the 95 film in a very long time. And I feel like you might have a better memory of it than I would.
I watched this movie twice. Once from a theatrical point of view, and once from a video game point of view. Because deep down, it is a video game movie. And I'm kind of with Dave. I miss, like, the vibrant colors coming off of Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I miss the kind of blocky animation when it came to Goro.
That Goro animatronic from the original film I missed horribly.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
I miss that thing. But, you know, I will say my take on it was very much like yours. I saw the theatrical aspect of it, but then it took me out of it every time they fan serviced in a get over here or fatality or a cheesy one liner. And my question, I guess if you haven't seen it in a very long time and Rebecca hasn't really seen it, I guess my question is more directed to Dave. Dave, which version of this movie do you actually prefer?
95.
See, I'm in total agreement. I appreciate what they tried to do, and I certainly didn't like Cole in his ripoff Black Panther costume, the one that absorbs the impact and pushes it back. I saw their point of trying to bring in a new character and just be like, okay, here's the world of Mortal Kombat. But I'd rather watch, you know, the Mortal Kombat characters be in a Mortal Kombat movie. I'll take all the cheesiness and crappy one-liners from the 95 version any day.
And I don't just to be clear, like, I don't begrudge them trying something new and different, right? Like,
yeah, no.
I appreciate that, like, the entire premise of, you know, off-season Mortal Kombat, that was interesting. I'm okay with them bringing in a new character. I just didn't care. Like, Cole didn't really do it for me.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying there's stuff about this movie I did not like. Like, I love the fact that Scorpion is actually a good guy in this movie. I like that Kano actually started out as a good guy. You know, I like this kind of... They tried something new, and what they did come out with it, some of it worked. But the movie just did not stick its landing.
I was just going to say, one thing that I was very impressed with was the character design for Melina and Natara. Melina was the one that could open her mouth, like, obnoxiously wide. And Natara was the one that could fly around. They were terrifying. And that was... I thought whoever designed and animated them deserves a pat on the back.
I kept waiting for her mouth to open. I was just dreading it.
All right. Well, here's a question for both of you. Which movie do you think had the better fights? 95 or 2021?
I mean, I'm going to go with 2021 because it's got Joe Taslim in it, dog. Come on. Come on. But the 95 has the charm of a Power Rangers
flip. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I love the fight between Scorpion and Johnny Cage in the original. And I love... I love after Johnny beats the ever-loving crap out of Scorpion, he leaves a signed headshot that says, "To my biggest fan."
Yeah, I saw that clip.
The other thing I'll say, like, you know, I would watch them for different reasons. Like, if I'm looking for a fight to, like, just, like, take me back, the same way I would watch Power Rangers fighting. Of course, that's going to be 95. But, you know, and then there's movies that I watch because, like, the martial arts choreography is just, like, stunning. Thinking of Ico in The Raid or Tony Jaa in Ong Bak, like Ong those Bak, kind of yep. flicks.
I'm not with you on this one, Daniel.
Donnie Yen.
Oh, Donnie Yen. Yeah.
Or like anything with Donnie Yen in it. Like, that's a different kind of experience. And you feel like you're watching something more artful, I guess.
Okay.
They serve different purposes for me. Like, if I'm looking for that artful kind of martial artistry, we go to 2021 because, you know, Joe Taslim.
I'll watch the 2021 one over and over for Joss Lawson.
Yeah. I'll watch it over and over for him, and just the Scorpion Sub-Zero rivalry. And I mean, if I went back and watched the 95 version, I'd probably agree with you guys. And I'm sure there's a lot more consistency in that movie than the sort of, you know, one second we have this sort of like martial arts, Asian martial arts, Shakespearean, theatrical epic going on, and then the next moment we have, you know, why aren't you in Sharknado 6? And I'm it was just very the shift in tempo essentially was very jarring to me, because one moment I would love the movie and then the next moment I would just be like, I'd be looking at my watch because the characters just weren't coming off the screen as with any form of charisma for me. So,
and I think some of that like has to, I completely agree. It was a film that couldn't decide what identity to take on. Like 95, it knew exactly what it was. And it was exactly that.
Yeah.
For the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the shifting that you're talking about, it was like, We want to do the video game, the cheese of the video game, but also make it really, 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 really serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a way to blend the two without having such polarizing presentations of them.
No, like, I would agree. Yeah. I would agree with that, especially considering that, and you mentioned that the movie couldn't decide what tone to go with. I think it did decide what tone to go with. It just couldn't, it couldn't wrangle in every single scene and moment to that specific tone. What it wanted,
it can hold its form.
Right. Thank you. Very well put. We have a movie that opens beautifully, and that's the tone it wanted to go for. It wanted to maintain that tone. It wanted to maintain the tone where, Liu Kang and Kung Lao are together. It wanted to maintain the tone where we see Scorpion return and he's doing battle with Sub-Zero in their proper costumes, etc. But then they didn't quite have the execution, and sad to say, the actors, I thought, to really maintain that kind of atmosphere all the way through. And another thing I'll say, I don't know how well it's doing for Warner Brothers, but I think this movie could really, really, really benefit from a sequel, and I would love to see one, because I like the actors, at least the Asian actors playing these characters. I like the way it established the world. I like the rivalries that have been created, and I would like to see all of that built on. And I think there's even a more interesting place to take Cole now that we've, you know, introduced him into this world and whatnot. And it would be a darn shame if we never got to see Johnny Cage. So I think this is a film that really, really could benefit from a really solid sequel.
Well, at the end of the movie, they led to it thinking that there was going to be a sequel when Cole says, "I'm heading off to Hollywood." I was like, "Why? I'm looking for someone." And then there's a poster that says Hollywood fighter Johnny Cage. So,
just because they tease on it doesn't mean they'll make their money back and it'll be considered a worthwhile investment to make a second one. I mean,
yep.
How many times I'm going to speak blasphemy here? Dragon Ball Evolution.
What about this one, JR? Green Lantern.
Power Rangers.
The recent Power Rangers teasing Tommy. You know, we're not going to get any of that. So
I mean, especially with everybody. I mean, this is, you know, we just finished our Kong episode, so this is going into like the box office numbers and all that. But seriously, Kong was the movie to see in theaters. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everybody was like, "Oh, well, I just have HBO Max now, so why should I go see Mortal Kombat?" Like, I'm kind of on a fence by saying I'm kind of glad I didn't go spend money on this movie.
Hmm. That's interesting. So, I mean, and you're right on the box office, JR.
I don't know how well this movie will play out in box office numbers.
Okay, well, what's your point?
I hope it does well enough. I would really like to see a sequel, but I don't know what number WB is looking for, given the HBO Max release with the theatrical release.
Yeah, I see. This is another thing that I think we talked about much earlier when we saw HBO Max coming. Is, you know, what's the new norm? What's the new grossing number to consider a movie success?
Yeah. Yeah. And we still don't really have that answer. So
if we get a sequel, I would hope they'd spend a little more time on it, trying to keep it in its mold. Cause you know, like you were saying earlier, this is a movie that couldn't keep its form. It went from serious movie to soap opera.
CW soap opera too.
Like, oh,
first kind.
One Tree Hill.
One very, very positive thing I want to say about this movie, though, I hand it to the score.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really liked the score by Benjamin, I can't pronounce this guy's name. Walfish. We'll go with Benjamin Walfish and just say fish a lot. But he created his own kind of main theme for the movie, which I really did enjoy. But he also like continuously implemented the main Mortal Kombat theme.
Mm-hmm.
Into the orchestra as well. One of my favorite moments in the movie was when Scorpion returned, but when Sub-Zero lifts his hand and we see the kunai shoot through his arm, which later is perfectly fine. we hear the main theme played by an orchestra.
Yeah.
And I like that. Holy cow, what an entrance. It was so good.
It wasn't its DJ rave. It was a dun 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 dun
dun dun. Yeah, the tempo was slower and it was big and booming. I immediately downloaded the score and I was really
followed by "Get over
here!" Yeah, that was excellent. That's another thing we haven't really talked about is the violence in this movie. I can't remember the 95 version, but you know, were people getting like arms impaled and, you know, severe lacerations to the stomach and, you know, just getting up and continuously fighting like nothing happened in the last movie.
Didn't Goro rip off a dude's arms? I don't remember the gore, but I remember Goro ripping off arms.
Dave?
I remember something getting ripped off. It might... I can't remember.
It was either
off the
arms or a head or...
Well, the point in this movie, obviously, it's rated R, so...
No, he broke somebody's back.
Oh, that's what he... Yeah, he banged him.
Yeah, he banged the guy.
The violence has been ramped up in this movie because it's rated R, but what got me is that, you know, Sonya would, like, stab Kano in the leg, right? But he, you know, he was fine, like, 10 seconds late.
He literally walked it off.
He literally...
Thank you.
And part of me is just like, could they have found a better way around this? Or is it just because it's Mortal Kombat? Do we expect massive stabbings and lacerations that no one could walk away from, but these characters do?
I think until you see the fatality, we're just like, all right, you can walk it off.
Put it in the cold tub.
Yep.
You want to talk about violence? Have you seen some of the animated feature films of Mortal Kombat?
Yes.
Yes.
I watched some of those clips on YouTube where you watch all the superpower scenes from a character. Well, they had one of Scorpion from the animated feature film Mortal Kombat: Scorpion's Revenge, and holy bejesus, the animation and effects weren't good. They were damn good and excruciatingly bloody. All the scenes where Scorpion's chained weapon goes through each head of a henchman and ripping out their spines. Funny, Optimus did that to Megatron in Dark of the Moon.
Fatality.
Of course it
was. Yeah.
One shall stand. One shall fatality.
One shall finish him.
That actually sounds good. I now know where some of Michael Bay's inspiration came from. Anyway, I need to watch Scorpion's Revenge soon because it looks sickeningly awesome, and I recommend it to everybody else here.
Here's a question for you, Rebecca.
Yes.
Now that you've seen this movie, are you interested in playing the games?
Let me rephrase that. Are you interested in breaking your fingers?
She's played Budokai Tenkaichi.
Dude, we've all played Budokai. I can't even pull off a finishing move in Mortal Kombat, okay?
It's the one with the combination controls, like up, right is like a certain
attack. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that kind of game. Sure, yeah.
You gotta be ridiculously fast.
Well, yes and no. Typically those finishing moves happen when a character's kind of dazed, right?
You still have to be within range. You have to pull it off. Like, they're almost timed. I think the last Mortal Kombat game I actually played was Mortal Kombat DC, and I remember having a hard time.
I played that on Dave and Buster's. It gave you cards, like trading cards.
Did it? I actually wish I had some of those trading cards. The DC characters in that were surprisingly well put together. I like their costumes.
I'll tell you one thing. I'll play the games, but I mostly just want to draw the characters now. And that's just
me. Contain my shock. All right, let's sound off here. Everyone's favorite character from the 2021 version. Let's go. Dave.
who do you think? Sub-Zero. All right. Who, Taslim? Fool. No, Goldar.
JR.
Kano wins.
Yeah. Rebecca.
Get over here, Scorpion. Yeah.
I gotta agree with both JR and Rebecca, but in this case, I'm gonna take Scorpion.
So. I've got a finisher. What was your favorite fan service moment?
Oh no, this is too easy. Get over here. What an entrance, though. Listen, he said that at the exact right moment. You can't get much better than that. It was an impressive entrance.
I kind of like fatality, or sorry, flawless victory.
Oh, by Kung Lao.
Yeah,
flawless victory.
Because I didn't see that actor when he said that. You know who I saw?
Yeah, Kung Lao. I agree.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm talking about is this kind of Shakespearean delivery. Like the Asian actors act like they are on stage delivering lines to everyone in row 73. It may have been over the top, but he utters the line with such conviction.
And the way he throws his chin strap on.
You believe him. You believe he just nailed a combo here and is about to take on some god. I loved it. Yeah, that's a good one, Dave.
Because I like the 1995 one. Your soul is mine.
Okay. Rebecca. Not that you know the fan service that well, but you said you did the research.
Well obviously I love Get Over Here, and I did like Flawless Victory from from
Kung Pao. Hey, what's your name? Kung Pao. All right. Favorite line. And I have a feeling all of ours are going to be from Kano and need to be censored.
It's not what you think.
Okay. I want to hear JR's now. There's no... You can't live up to this.
I fancy myself a bit of an artist.
Rebecca.
Well, it's not really much of a line, just what Kano's reaction when Liu Kang puts his shoulder on Kano's puts his hand on Kano's shoulder, and Kano's like,
I actually have to take my back. Mine's both a line and a fan service moment.
Okay.
It's when they're training Kano and they keep doing the same move on him. And he just keeps going, stop that, stop that, stop that. Because how many times have you played Mortal Kombat and they've done the same move?
Over and over. Yeah, okay.
Coming from the guy that spams Kirby.
Dave, get in the pot.
Dave, what about your line?
I liked when Kano first got his power. He's like, I can shoot lasers. That's so much better than yours. He's like, yours is dumb. I knew I'd get mine first.
Okay.
And he's completely not mad about whatever they were picking on him at. Lasers!
I can't get over, and I've been using this probably way too often lately. When I think it was Kung Lao told Sonya Blade that she can't enter the arena because it's only for the chosen ones. Kano goes, he just makes his reaction, goes, effing whoops.
I just forgot about one. I caught it on my second viewing, okay? Mm-hmm. when Sonya Blade is describing Mortal Kombat, the tournament, and how the chosen ones have the marking on her, and you know, Cole goes, "Where's your marking?" And she goes, "I don't have one." In the background, you can hear Kano go, "Wah wah."
Okay, I didn't catch that. I'll have to watch this for a third time.
I don't have one.
Well, here we kind of to wrap this up, guys. We have a question about Mortal Kombat, and this comes from Nathan from the Monster Island Film Vault, and he asked us two questions. Who is a better Kano or Shang Tsung for that matter? I think he's referring to between the 95 and the 2021 one.
Okay, I can answer this.
Yeah, me too. Go for it.
This Kano, the 2021, and then the 95 Shang Tsung.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa. Mm-hmm. Was the guy that played him. That when this guy said flawless victory, this is who I saw.
Yeah.
Like that is who I like this guy made such an impact on how I perceived these characters.
Oh dude, he was terrifying. I felt like I had that dream of him holding up Liu Kang's brother and just going, "You're next."
And, you know, this isn't to, you know, shut down the 2021 Shang Tsung. Jin Han is a fantastic actor, and I think I'm glad he didn't try to replicate what Tagawa did in 1995. But Tagawa was so into this role.
He was unhinged as that role. He
was the character on so many levels. And the entire movie... He went the entire movie with his nose wrinkled.
Oh, God.
He was just angry the entire film. And I agree with JR, completely scary. But I, as far as Kano goes, absolutely 2020.
Hands down.
2021.
Yeah. Give me more, Josh Lawson.
That's the only reason I want a sequel. More Josh Lawson.
FN whoops.
All right there, girly.
Okay.
Let's wrap this one up.
I think next up we had poorly pitched, right?
We do. We do have a poorly pitched. It's been a while. We couldn't.
It was me.
It was you. Okay. Yes. Could you refresh our memories?
No. Okay. I'm just going to have to guess.
Fair enough. I'm going to guess.
I'm going to flip if you guys actually remember and get it.
I'm going to guess. A boy wants a pet, but gets something completely unexpected. Something along those lines.
Oh, Tinkerbell.
I completely forgot what.
let me just give it to you. As a quick refresher, a young person gets more than they bargained for when they happen upon a strange pet.
Gremlins?
No. Could be gremlins, but I'm also thinking, okay, you could also throw Lilo and Stitch in there.
But it seems too easy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I don't know if you've seen this, Dave. I'm going to try for it anyway. Monster trucks.
My God, nope. Monster trucks. Okay.
There are two answers that I would accept for this.
I'm going to say Mac and Me.
Oh, that would have been a good one. I should have accepted that too. I didn't write that one down. The two answers I was going for was Bumblebee or Transformers. Nice job, Rebecca.
Rebecca has left the chat.
Uh,
You know, I wonder if you had rephrased it, but gets more than meets the eye.
Oh, no, I think
well, that would have been... that. No.
Nice job, everyone. Mac and honorable mention to Mac and me.
Yay!
Yeah, Mac and me was... That was... You really pulled that one out of the hat, JR.
Well, I don't know how, but...
Yeah, it's not often you get to pull Mac and me out.
You really don't. You don't get to relive that traumatizing event very often.
All right, so who's doing the next poorly pitch?
I have another one.
Good grief, Dave. All right, well, since everyone's silent, go for it. Uh-oh.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Murderous one miser goes home.
Well, you're almost there, actually. a dude with a lot of emotional baggage wears a costume and stops a secret society.
I have a guess.
I have one too, maybe two of them.
Oh, I might have 20 is the thing, guys. this doesn't narrow it down at all. Okay, all right, next time on the Drift Space.
On the Drift Space.
Okay, Fanboy 50, I believe.
Yes. I'm down. I'll go.
I'll time you.
Okay.
Get over there!
Why'd that sound like Barney? Are you ready, kids? Get over here!
Get over here!
Okay, now you're just being...
Now you're with the slideshow, Bob.
Okay. G, you ready?
Yep.
Set. Go!
All right, so recently a screenplay was leaked online for the first episode of CW's Powerpuff Girls. Now, Powerpuff Girls, they already shot the pilot, but apparently it was so bad that they're going to go back and rework it. And I was so curious. I mean, the CW, the channel that airs Batwoman, thought this was bad enough to rework. I was like, well, I've got to read this thing. And effing whoops, I mean, it is the worst screenplay for anything I may have ever read. Just a whole lot of sexual innuendo. Professor Utonium is a complete jerk. It's awful. It's
time, but keep going.
Yes, please, keep going. What? This is news to me. What?
Oh my gosh. So you hadn't heard of the live-action Powerpuff Girls that they're doing, Rebecca?
No.
Okay, so CW, in their infinite wisdom, has decided that they're going to do a Powerpuff Girls show where it's many, many years after they were little kids saving the world. They're in their 20s now, and they're trying to live their own lives.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But...
yeah, that'll fly.
Professor Utonium is... just a sleazeball who has been trying to keep the girls on the straight and narrow so he can market them, make money off them. He dates the mayor's... who's the mayor's...
Miss secretary?
Miss secretary. Bellum? Yeah, Miss Bellum. He dates Miss Bellum, who he's a complete jerk to. And then the Powerpuff Girls themselves are completely unlikable on every extent imaginable.
This whole thing sounds unlikable.
And, you know, Blossom walks in on Buttercup having sex with her girlfriend. She can't get – Buttercup can't get up Blossom at one point in time and says the line, hold on, I have it right here, and I quote here's one – I have the screenplay in front of me. Hurry up and wake up or I'll leak your nudes. And then Bubbles looks at Buttercup. Well, it worked on you once. The entire show is full of this just treasure trove of jokes, including, well, some of the stuff I can't say, never mind, but it's bad. It's bad. And it was so bad that the CW decided that they weren't going to use this pilot. They need to go back and rework it. But yeah, thank you, Diablo Cody, for this one. So...
Alrighty.
GJ forfeits his next
like 12. Yeah, no.
That is just God.
Yeah.
I could have told you it was a bad idea from the first live-action Powerpuff Girls idea.
Yes.
All right, Jay, are you ready?
Sure.
All right, set, go.
I've been taking a different form of stress lately by playing a game called Pokemon Snap. It's actually kind of pleasant. You know, it's not your typical game, but it's still kind of fun. I only know, like, 5 of the Pokemon, so I take a lot of pictures of those. I also tried to learn to play Magic with Dave and Liv the other day. They seem to understand the game. I'm still playing with grass and trying to make magic out of it. And on top of that, I'm done with Clone Wars. I'm on season 6, and I've been plowing through that like a madman. Hopefully in the next week, I'll be going to a galaxy not so far away and be getting my own lightsaber. Looking forward to that as well.
Time.
Well timed.
Wow. Flawless victory.
Reb?
Ready.
Sit. Go.
Well, this isn't your typical nerd rant for 50 seconds. This is what I would call classical review. I just finished a book called Things Fall Apart, written by Chinwe Achebe, which takes place in pre-colonial life and in a part of Nigeria. It follows a main protagonist, Okonkwo, a man with 3 wives and several children, and his daily lifestyle in the village of Umofia. A lot of his lifestyle would definitely be frowned upon by the Western POV, but one has to understand that that was the way of his people and the law of his land. I feel like his story gives a small sample of what life was like in Africa before his village was invaded by the white Englishmen and his
time.
Whole... Yeah. So, yeah, I read a book. Good job.
I did me some book learning.
Ew.
Dave, you ready?
I am.
Runner to your mark, set, go.
All right, well, I got to hang out with my buddy JR and nerd out for a weekend, but I'm going to use my time to tell some dad jokes, so buckle up, kids. To write with a broken pencil is pointless. How does Moses make coffee? He brews it. The Energizer buddy went to jail. He was charged with battery. Why can't a T-Rex clap their hands? Well, because they're extinct. I love dad jokes because I love dad jokes, but I don't have kids. I guess that makes me a faux pas. 6:30 is my favorite time of day. Hands down. God. A magician was walking down the street, then he turned into a store. Sausage puns are the worst. What do you call it? A bear with no teeth? A gummy bear. Why shouldn't you trust
time,
Adams?
Time.
It's my time, and I will use it how I wish.
Because dinosaurs are extinct.
Oh. Yeah, you certainly did, didn't you? Rebecca, give us an exit strategy.
I'd be happy to. Well, I'd say this episode was a flawless victory.
How many times has that been said this episode?
I should have said something else.
Get over here.
This whole episode was just
fan service.
Really, this whole episode's been a fatality. End it.
Okay, thank y'all for joining us in our discussion of Mortal Kombat 2021. I am your host, Rebecca. If you'd like to check out some of my artwork, I got a brand new Facebook page and a brand new logo. You can now find me on the Linktree app, linktr.ee/reb.hudge.
And I'm Dave. I do another podcast with my wife, but I'm not going to plug it. Instead, I'm going to encourage you to head on over to iTunes and leave the Drift Space a 5-star rate and review. Helps us get on the board and gets the word out about a small podcast. We would be ever so appreciative. Thanks, guys.
And I'm G. You can find me on Twitter at GManMysterioid. And you can check out my Substack, which I am going to plug, called Deferential Wrath of Rusting Markalite Canon at markalite.substack.com.
Still sounds fake.
Okay, drop the joke. It's old. Like 1995 Mortal Kombat.
Thank you, JR.
So still very enjoyable is what I'm hearing. Anyway, go on.
Thank you for picking up what I put down.
I spelled what you were stepping in.
And I'm JR. Instagram is LittleManCosplay. Twitter is LittleMan_says1.
And we are The Drift Space. You can check out our show on bit.ly/TDSlinks, where you can find us on all your favorite podcatchers. If you like what you've heard, share it with a friend. Then you both can hit us up on our socials at The Drift Space. Geek out with us or just say, hey, we'd love to hear from you. And as always, thanks for listening and for your support. And always, stay strapped.
Mortal Kombat!